Welcome to the Knock on Archery podcast, where we bring all archers and bow hunters together from all walks of life with the goal to educate, empower, and inspire you to be better both in the field and on the range.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another Knock on podcast. I feel like this one's going to be good. It's a very impromptu one, and I am here with Adam Seward, and we literally met not too long ago. And
yeah.
We met through, I booked a hunt through Land Trust, and this is the landowner. So I came, thank you for letting me come early, by the way, just so you could give me a rundown of the place and tell me where to get set up for turkeys. That was awesome. But as we were driving around and talking, I just thought, man, I've never kind of heard the other side of the table talking. You know, I'm the consumer of a product, I'm gonna say, which is booking hunting on private land, you know, through an app, and then going there and getting to see some really cool properties and getting to meet some really cool property owners. But you had such a unique perspective that from a landowner's point of view, I mean, you seem elated right now with Land Trust and what it's meant for the farm. And you're seventh generation, right? Seventh generation farmer in Iowa. You're about 2 hours from me, but you know, this is certainly an easy drive for a 2 day. You have the option for lodging here too, which is awesome. But yeah, give me a rundown of kind of what this has done for the place, or what it's, you know, what it's been like from a landowner's perspective, because you were like, this is a needed thing.
Yeah.
It was a cool perspective for me.
You know, especially with commodity prices starting to drop, I would say it is needed. It's certainly a separate revenue source that guys can pull off of, but the bigger picture is the fact that I'm able to share what I do in my little operation to help feed the world. And you know, we've kind of been bastardized in the media, whether it's, you know, animal protein, or you know, us farmers are just pulling you know, resources out of the soil and never really giving back. So anytime I can have someone from a different part of the country come up and sit down and just have kind of a discussion about what I actually do and how much I actually care about the country that we live in, you know, it's a neat thing, I guess.
So you were about to make a comment to me, and I'm like, stop, stop. I'm going to go get my recorder. We're going to talk about this. So you literally said, I forget what your comment was, but you're like, you know, there was a time when we were actually anti-hunting, but, and I'm like, stop. I want to hear this. So,
well, you know, there's that 5% of any group, you know, whether we're out west buying calves or, you know, talking to ranchers, you know, people in the farming industry are kind of all on the same side, regardless of geographic location, and same with the beef industry. And I've just, we've had so many gates left open, and you know, the big one for me is when they cut a fence just to, you know, I would rather have them come get me out of bed and bring a loader tractor out to pick up a deer that they're poaching than you know, cut my fence. And I'm not saying all hunters are poachers, so I need to make that very clear. All I see typically is the end product, where a five barb fence has been cut so someone can drag a carcass through there. And so it doesn't take very many of those to go, all right, you know, I see a poacher, I'm gonna, you know, run him down. And
it's the age old tale, one bad apple spoils the bunch.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, realistically, it's probably 1% of the bad apples. my experience now that we're, you know, kind of running an outfitter, you know, I'm using my air fingers for quotes here.
Yeah, because you're really not an outfitter.
No,
I don't think.
And especially in the state of Iowa, I don't want to say that I am. I think there's been.
Yeah, because I don't think it is. I had it said this way, and then I was like, that is exactly what it is. It's a private land DIY hunt.
Absolutely, or an Airbnb of hunting.
Yeah, which has been awesome. So now that you've got some hunters in, your perspectives change because, you know, you obviously there's so much of us that care more for that habitat and that environment.
Yeah. So I've done a 180, and now that I've able to kind of take a deep breath and kind of look at how we're structuring our organization, I'm able to see that we all kind of have very similar goals, I guess. And you know, with land trust, the biggest thing that I see is we have an opportunity to, for the, like the farm and ranch community, to sit down with the hunting community, and we're going to agree to disagree on some stuff, because we've got to get cattle fed, and you know, they want elk to eat or they want deer to eat, and I get all that, but we are both under attack by probably the same organizations that, you know, want to do away with hunting, want to do away with open range ranching, want to do away with high density grazing and all of this other stuff. So really it makes sense to make the hunting community allies, and what better people to have out in our pastures and out in our timbers than a hunter that to come back and go, hey, you know, you got a cow out there calving, you might want to buzz out there and check out real quick, you know. So I think it's easier to look at the plus sides and then maybe loop back and then deal with some of the negative sides and try to come up with a solution for that.
That's a powerful statement. I really appreciate that. And there's probably a lot of hunters out there, certainly new ones, that just took a really big breath and thought, okay, wow, that's, you know, that's a very different type of angle from a perceived, you know, farmer / private landowner. And I'm the hunter who, yeah, sometimes it's intimidating going and knocking on a door. Even if it's not intimidating, sometimes you knock on the door and you step into that less than 1% mess.
Right.
So to, you know, for me to be like, you know, I'm going to be at the north part of the state. And unfortunately, I'm only with these Total Archery Challenge events that I go to. I'm going to miss 4 out of 6 weeks of our season, mm-hmm, because I'm going to be gone. So when I'm up here in this part of the state, I thought, I'm going to look to see where I could maybe just book a spot where I could go turkey hunting for a few days while I'm up there. And so for me to be able to do that on my computer and look at that and then be able to reach out to you, contact you, and then, you know, you're, you know, gracious enough to, you know, hey, I didn't have anything going on this morning, head on up and I'll give you the show around. And that way, once, you know, you show up for season, you're kind of off and rolling. That is, like, honestly, it's as easy as it gets. I mean, it was simple. Mm-hmm. And there's no bell curve, you know, there's no struggle. So for a hunter to hear a landowner with that perspective, there's already just this huge barrier that's been brought down. Because you're right, we're, you know, I like to know where my food comes from. I certainly love habitat. I honestly love seeing other people's habitat projects because I get so many ideas. And honestly, it's like every time you go out in the wild, you just see something different. Today, you and I mean, how old are you?
I'm 47.
Okay, I'm 48. So in almost 50 years, like, we saw a pair of geese nesting on like there's a pair of geese nesting on a tower blind.
Yeah,
that, you know, you took me down into your, you know, your turkey mecca down in there, and I looked up on the highest point of the hill where it looked like, you know, I'm sure there's been some type of a shooting house on that high point for a long time, but here's two Canadian geese up on the top of that thing, and it's just like, have you ever seen that before? No, I haven't seen that before. And then we spent probably 30 minutes talking about CP25 programs and legumes, and I started, you know, you were telling me about you were transplanting, you know, you'd kind of got some extra cottonwoods mm-hmm. going where some had been damaged or died from age, and I was, you know, I haven't been able to get that going successfully. So we were able to talk about some things like that, that outdoorsmen, there's so much common ground, because both of us, even though we're consumers to the land, we're both stewards to the land.
Absolutely. And that's the end goal, I guess, is, you know, we all want to leave this place better than we found it, or, you know, whatever the hip thing to say is. But
we should.
I truly do, and I'm a big believer in a complete ecosystem. You know, just I see so many people that, you know, say, "Hey, I'm hunting here, but I bought this property and I'm setting it up for bucks." And I go, "Oh, okay. So what are you gonna do when the neighbors set up for does and they come in heat and all your bucks leave because they're chasing the doe?"
Yeah.
And I go, "Oh my God, I never thought about that." You know. So it's really fun, and to say that I haven't learned from guys that I have, you know, come in, I've had them from, I get hit with the southern states a lot. You know, like your Tennessees, your Georgias, your Alabama, Florida.
You got some good old boys coming in.
Oh, I got some of the best guys in the world that come here.
That's awesome. So you've met totally new people that are like, that'll be friends even outside of this, you think?
I might have 25% of my customers that don't text me on a regular basis.
Oh, wow.
It's nuts. And to my knowledge, I don't know of, you know, call it blessed, call it lucky, call it whatever. I don't know of anyone else in the land trust system that has ever necessarily had that happen or whatever. But yeah, I could flip my phone out right now, and you know, my Tennessee boys, they're some jokesters, and we had a great time. I mean, and it was a real diverse group, and but they came with knowledge, and a lot of it applied to Tennessee. Some of it didn't necessarily apply to the state of Iowa. But you can still carve a little bit of off of what they were saying and kind of utilize it. So it's just all networking. So yeah, at this point I can pretty much break down in any town in the South and I'll have a place to stay. Yeah, I would call them all friends. By the end of the thing, you know, by the end of the hunt, you know the name of their kids, you know the name of, you know, certainly know the name of their dogs, and you've had many glasses of whiskey and many cold beers and war stories and just all kinds of stuff. It's been really, really neat.
And we're podcasting in this cool little, like, you made this little cubby hole in your workshop. You know, we're in a big typical Iowa equipment workshop in here. I'm sure there's been a combine or two in this baby. But you've kind of built this little cool little, like, little hunting nook over here where we're sitting, and right away I'm like, okay, how many stories have been already told over here? Because you've only done this for a year, you said?
Yeah. We've hosted from other states, kind of on our own, and you know, and then Land Trust approached me. Well, actually, I was riding down the road. We went and looked at a group of cows, and we were coming back, and I was listening to RFD radio, and I heard Nick on there. Golly, what the hell is he talking about? And then, you know, right away, I'm like, oh, those stupid hunting deals. And I so
here we go.
I must have been looking for a fight that day or something. I'm gonna call them dumbasses up and tell them everything I wanted to, you know, get on my soapbox. And
this is awesome. I love this conversation because I mean, you definitely, hey, this is typical, but you definitely, like, I knew if I went much deeper in some topics that you were going to give me your opinion and yeah. you're going to go deep in it. So you called Nick with it with that mentality?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was.
bring it on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and prior to that, I was out in Rapid City, South Dakota, an RCAF USA convention, and we were talking policy and legislation, you know. So I was, my mind was just in fight mode as it was. And then I heard this, and I'm like, I'm sick of ranchers getting stepped on. I'm going to call and give them a piece of my mind, you know. And by the end of the conversation, they
had you looped.
Yeah, they sent Jake out, and Jake signed me up for all kinds of shit. I'm like, what the hell happened here? I'm not supposed to be a friends of hunters.
That is awesome. So, I love that.
Yeah, well, you know, and here's what's funny. I was
Good for you guys.
So I got signed up, and I don't think I actually talked to Nick. Maybe I did. I just don't remember. But I talked to someone out there, and they put a spell on me, whatever. And so I'm out at this cattleman's convention, and I'm standing in line. And we had a super boring speaker, you know, one of those deals that would just put you to sleep. And so I got up, and I'm probably in the beer line or someplace. And this guy in front of me has a land trust hat on. And I look at it, and I go, oh, I say, hey, land trust. And right away, he tries selling me, you know. And so I'm like, oh, Lord, I should have just kept my mouth shut. But I was already signed up with land trust, see, so I didn't need to hear about it. And he pulls out his phone, and he's like, oh, you're from Iowa? And he says, we got some really cool properties. And I look at the property, and I go, yeah, that's mine. And he goes, what? Are you Adam? I go, yeah. I go, who are you? And it was Nick.
Okay.
And, so, and you know, so
where was that cattleman's at? Was that
that must have been the time in Rapid City.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
I was because
so
I went to something like that in Nashville last year, like a year. I thought it was February or March
that
I was there.
That would have probably been like an NCBA or and I don't know that you want to get me on that topic on your podcast.
Okay, divert. Yeah,
I don't know
rancher politics, but yeah, I'll do my best to just deal with the hunting politics.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point.
It'd be best. I'm a big RCAF guy, so anyway, yeah, we just started talking, and I said, hey, I said, you know, I'm hard of hearing, and anytime there's, you know, noise around, it's just really challenging. So we sat down and had a beer, and I started introducing him to ranchers out there, and he's buying beers and passing out business cards and having conversations. And that's where Nick and I's relationship, I guess, really started. I mean, obviously we had one prior to that with me signing up with this company, but I was pretty impressed. He, very articulate. One of those guys that, I think he has to dumb down the conversation when he talks to guys like me, you know.
He's a very bright guy.
Every fourth word, I'm mentally thinking if I've even heard of that word before that he used, you know, but yeah, very smart.
I was introduced to him by a guy named John Barklow, who's a very trusted figure in the hunting industry.
Okay.
But yeah, Barklow, you know, met Nick, and then John actually called me, and he's like, this fits what your problem or what, you know, my perceived problem, because I love getting people into hunting, and I love kind of trying to make an easy path to mm-hmm. get in, because I feel like the easier the path to get in, the more likely to stay in, because
sure.
there's certainly a fallout rate. Like, I get it. You know, hunting's hard. It, you know, it's not easy. It's not killing every single time you go out. You know, hunting's hard. It's commitment. But John was like, you know, this might be the way for the people that get into archery and to get in to bow hunting, this might be a way for them to not have so much of a hurdle, an initial hurdle to like find a place to go after they've came out of hunter's education or, you know, along that topic. And then I met Nick, we talked, and he just said, well, hey, he's like, you know, how about this? How about, you know, I'm just going to show you how to use the app. just go do one. And I ended up finding one in Missouri that was, you know, it's only 45 minutes away, but it allowed me to shoot a second bird, you know, allowed me to cross the state line, mm-hmm. get another mm-hmm. bird. And he was freaking awesome too. Him and his son came out. They came out to my camper like every night. You know, he's like bringing me some. You know, he's raising beef, so he'd like, you know, try out these brats. I had these brats done. You got to try these things. And now I'm like getting my meat from him sometimes. And I booked another hunt there. And honestly, every rancher I've met, it's almost like, you know, they're happy to have someone new come in, and they want to get to know you. And, you know, it kind of feels like you're not being loyal by not going back there, which is just such a cool vibe, because that's what I used to get when you knocked on a door and when you nurtured. You know, there was a time where the only way I was going to hunt a place like this is if, you know, if I rolled up here and came through that door in the summer, you'd be looking at me like, what does this guy want? And honestly, what I would end up having to do is say, you know, hey, do you mind if I hunt? And you said, if you said no, I, you know, last time a hunter was here was this poacher and he cut through my freaking fence and blah blah blah, and my next thing would be, how about I give you a day of fixing fence for every day you let me hunt? Because that's what I would do. And that's the type of things I would have to do to find a place to hunt.
Well, let's back up just a second. Something really cool about land trust from my perspective is, and I've got guys that just naturally go, hey, you know, and I don't think they're trying to beat Nick out of any money. I think they're just trying to be frugal. They go, hey, should I just, or think they're benefiting me.
Yeah.
They go, hey, I can just pay you direct. And, you know, I told Jake, and I think I've told Nick, you know, just looked him in the eye and I said, I'll never cheat you out of anything.
Yeah.
You know, I won't. And there's an incentive because there is an insurance policy. You are insured as a hunter. I'm insured as a landowner. So you book through land trust and we're both protected. When you start getting liabilities and money involved, that's when a lot of friendships fall off.
Yeah.
You know, inadvertently. So he's really thought of, you know, Nick and his team have really thought, and I'm sure someone's going to listen to this podcast that's with land trust and be like, well, I'm the one that thought of that. quit putting Nick on a pedestal.
Yeah, because Nick's like, hey, he's got some superstars. Like, Nick definitely has some superstars around him, and they're all hustlers.
So let me just say this. Whoever at land trust that I have not said their name, I apologize. It's just Nick's my guy. You know, well, Jake's my guy. Yeah. But you know, Nick's the face that I've met. So I don't mean to give him all the credit, mm-hmm. but he's due of
yeah.
Of
let's
some
take
credit
away from Nick for
but,
sure.
But yeah, Nick, Land Trust has they are bridging a gap between farm and ranch and hunting, and I think that kind of throws some people off. It spooks some people. But this might be the solution that we need.
Wow.
It, like we spoke about a little bit before, we've got some enemies, and we share the same enemies. We all have the same goals for the most part. I don't think anybody wants to get rid of any other species of animal, you know, just get rid of all the deer.
I want more.
Yeah, well, and there's enough to go around. We have to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to be able to do it from a hunting perspective. I've got a limited hunting background. So, you know, when I've got guys from Georgia or you know, guys from wherever and come up and they, you know, I try to really pick their brain about what I can do better, because I don't want them leaving unsatisfied. In fact, I want to develop that relationship, and I want to play the long game with them, to where, you know, 10 years from now, you know, I go, hey, did little Johnny graduate? You know, how's little Johnny getting along?
Yeah.
And, you know, oh my gosh, you know, he was 10 years old.
Well,
when he met
and
him.
That's how it is. Like where I hunt, for example, well, one of my favorite hunts of the year is in British Columbia. It'll be, you know, coming up in the first week of May, and I'm up there hunting with Nick Yarish at Chipolton River Outfitters. It's Chipolton, but I call it Chipolton just to make him mad. But originally, when I went to BC, I hunted at another outfitter, which was owned by a gentleman named Bert. Mm-hmm. And Bert was my first guide. And I hunted with Bert for a few years, and his son Dusty was just, you know, a little punk out on a dirt bike in the yard. And normally, before heading up to bear camp, we'd kind of pull in, he'd say bye to his wife. So I met, you know, I met Mary Jane, and, you know, I met Dusty, and I met his sisters. And then, you know, we go up to camp, and then the next thing, you know, when we're done and we come home, you know, everybody wants to see what I got, you know.
Right,
and then,
right.
Well, that was 22 years ago. Now, you know, Dusty is one of my closest friends.
Sure.
You know, if, you know, definitely one of my closest friends, as is Bert. As is Jeremy, all three of them that I met on that. And then when I go to Alberta, I started hunting with Todd at Red Willow Outfitters, and Taylor, his son, was just a little kid. And now Taylor's guiding, and he's, you know, and Taylor's running the operation, and I know everything from Taylor since, you know, since he went through puberty to, mm-hmm. to like now he's finally married, and I'm like, oh man, you know. So I, that's like, those parts of the relationships are part of hunting. You know, they're lifetime friendships.
Well,
with this stuff.
That's what never gets talked about. You know, I've got guys that come and they really don't give a crap about killing shit.
Yeah.
They want to hang out with their buddies. Have a cold beer, talk, and you know, just just, and that's,
I'm laughing at what you told me earlier. You're like, there's some guys that just want to pay a couple hundred bucks a day to get away from their wives.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, but it's fun to, you know, I mean, you're working at a factory in Detroit, Michigan or wherever, and it's nice to step out of reality and go kill a bird, go kill a deer, and you know, get a, beat your chest a little bit and get away, and just it's the whole thing. It's the drive there. It's the trials and tribulations of a flat tire, or
oh, yeah.
You know, getting low on gas and wondering if the pickup that says you got 15 miles to go is all that accurate.
Yeah, and then you're in a Iowa farm town, you're hoping they have pumps that work at 24/7.
Right, right.
Otherwise, you're knocking on your door saying, can I borrow a jerry can, which I've done.
Well, and, you know, the state of Iowa, once you cross the Mississippi going west, it's certainly different. And people recognize that once they do cross that. It's you don't have all these, you know, highly populated communities and towns and stuff. So it can get a little scary when you're rolling across to Iowa and, you know,
yeah,
you're low
yeah.
on gas or,
yeah.
or whatever. So,
and what's cool is, like, I could totally picture if I was here deer hunting right now, and we've only known each other. I mean, for those of you listening to the podcast, you know, it's, I mean, normally the people on the podcast are definitely, you know, friend, lifetime friends, but we met an hour and a half ago. We drove around, and I'm just like, this is such a cool angle. And I'm already picturing, if I was here deer hunting, and if I would have came up and been like, hey man, I got one down, I'm looking around, and I know right now you're freaking jumping on one of these machines. You're going to go out there and, you know, help me get that thing. And
oh,
I can
yeah.
already picture that thing being humped up on one of the buckets of the tractors in here, and, you know, we're able to be in here and break this thing down and
absolutely.
Throw some back straps on a grill. Like, that's, I just know that's what would happen. And I want people to understand that, you know, those are the types of, honestly, that's the type of relationship that I've always understood as a hunter, because everywhere I've hunted since I was 9 years old, well, my uncle was a BASF sales rep for mm-hmm. the whole South. So he sold everything to do with cotton. So everything was like relationships with farmers.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You know, and so for me, anytime we would get to have permission and go somewhere, you're meeting a farmer, and I've never been to a rancher's place where they're not hardworking and throwing in whatever type of hand they can to get a job done.
Oh yeah, we're, you know, and especially the, what's unique about land trust is wherever you're at on your hunting journey, meaning you just got out of hunter safety and you don't know which direction to go, land trust can point you in the right direction, not only the right state, but the, you know, the right county, however you want to do it. We're probably a little more hands-on here. Just, I don't really hunt anymore, just due to time. So if I can somehow be a part of your hunt, whether it's lug your deer, help you gut it, help you cut it up, whatever, that's kind of what makes me tick.
Let you get back in even though you just don't have the time. You're trying to run a business.
Yeah, and I still get to be a part of the story, and that's what's really fun about it. And, you know, then we get to, you know, have a beer afterwards or a glass of tea or something. And
glass of tea. There's no freaking tea around here, dude.
We don't
start out by lying to all my listeners.
We do tea in the morning.
Should have just stopped with the bourbon. I mean, granted, I am like, you did give me a bottle of water, but
it's mineral water.
It's probably just because you wanted an empty bottle so you can put a mixer in this thing.
Yeah, that's all we had in the fridge besides beer. That's for mixing. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a cool way. And you know, I've got a six-year-old coming for him and his dad are coming. I think the first opening weekend, maybe.
For youth?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he's going to get him involved in that. And
so
you get to,
that's the best feeling. A youth hunter, like a kid that's gone hunting for the first time, that is...
Kids are fun.
That's the best.
My favorite is probably our senior hunters.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I totally relate to that, too.
I had a pretty elderly man that couldn't get around, and his son really wanted to bring his dad. And we spoke on the phone. So typically what I do is you'll make contact with me through Land Trust. And I've even kind of discussed it with Land Trust. I'm like, look, I'm not trying to make our conversations with the hunter and the landowner private, but I'm going to pull them off to my cell phone just because I'm not the computer guy, and it's just a pain in the ass for me to log into a computer and look at my, whatever. So I sent them to my cell phone. And this guy called, and we were talking for a while, and he really wanted to bring his dad on the last hunt, but he didn't think he could do it. And I just said, bring him. We'll make it happen. So him and I end up sitting in the Ranger, and we were pushing standing corn, and we'd go to the end of the Ranger, and I'd help him get out, and I'd hold his gun till it was time to take that shot. And it wasn't my memory, but I was a part of facilitating a pretty cool father-son deal because it probably was his last year to hunt.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I'm hoping we can get one more year out of him. But what a cool thing for me to be a part of, letting a father and a son share that last hunt together.
So at the beginning of the podcast, when you said you've come 180, 100%, you've come 180.
Yeah, I still hate fence cutters.
Me too.
I will burn you at the stake.
Me too. I was telling you, when we were talking about land trust, I think when it first came out, I actually, like I said, John Barklow is the one that told me about it, and I just said, man, I just feel like this is a good idea. And then I talked to Nick. Nick told me to try it, which I did. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all in with this, which like Nick would tell you, or definitely some other people in the industry would tell you, I tell people no, like for affiliation or, when I look at like, I refer like partners of mine, people that I really like their company.
Mm-hmm.
I like their DNA. I like their products. You know, I just say no a lot more than I say yes when people want to come on board our platform and, you know, be part of what I do, because I really need to believe in the products and I need to,
100%.
And I need to have a direct connection with the personnel. Like, you know, when I'm being able to see some of this stuff from the other, from like the inside, it helps me tell my listeners the why to all these types of products. So when LandTrust first came out, I don't know, I think the message came out incorrectly of like what it was, and there was people
I think it's still not completely understood.
Yeah, and you know, maybe it's not, but I just know every single landowner that I've talked to, they're like, yeah, I've put in, you know, you were showing me 30 acres of CRP that the state, you know, it's been so dry, the state, you know, is needing it redone because it's not, you know, and that's money out of your pocket. But you're like, you know, all this stuff helps me do things that create more habitat and make my farm better, which is awesome. And I told you about someone that I know that inherited some property through a will.
Mm-hmm.
And that property was in a trust. The property can't be sold. And so these two sisters are now like, you know, and the only reason I heard the conversation is because they were saying, how are we going to pay for the property tax?
Taxes.
Like, we didn't know there's property taxes
right.
on like this thing. And even if we inherit it, we still have to pay that every year. It's like, okay, well, here's a perfect example of these people could, you know, they could limit the amount of hunting that's happening on their place in
right.
order and literally like say, hey, after X amount of days, that's what we need to pay for these property taxes. We can cut it off at that point. So honestly, the people that did get to go hunt are actually having a better experience because there's limitation due to they just want to pay taxes.
Well,
but the other thing is that property isn't like going into the hands of someone to where no one would be hunting it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
It seems like there is a good why for it.
I'm going to guess once they get introduced to Jake, and Jake's my land trust guy. He's kind of my first person I report to, I guess you could call it. But if Jake handles them the way that he's handled me, they will be signed up for 365.
Okay.
Well, because it's land trust isn't just money, money, money. I mean,
yeah.
They truly believe in the, you know, the 10-year plan, the 30-year plan, the 50-year plan. That they're in it for the long haul. They want to improve properties. They want to just do the right thing. And I'm going to assume once those gals figure out that it's not just a money game, that this is a love and a passion for these folks, the land trust is probably going to pick up another X amount of acres.
Yeah. What have you had any hunters that came out that just more or less said, we can't even find a place to hunt by us?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Even if they've tried to like,
especially my southern guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those plantations are massive. And the hunt clubs, I was down south and someone was telling me like what the yearly thing is for hunt clubs. Actually, we were just in Texas hunting and someone was saying what they pay for their lease, like what each leaseholder has to pay
right.
and all that stuff. And honestly, I was sitting there thinking, if I would not be able to afford that, you know, like it's just, especially if I was in my 20s still getting my first real job and, you know, have a decent salary and trying to get your first, you know, house going
well,
and all that stuff.
There we get back into the liability side of things. You know, when some of these, you got to remember, you know, farming's becoming kind of big business now, you know, and a lot of these big companies don't want a target on their back from someone tripping over a log and becoming a liability. So with a lot of this farm ground being bought out, a lot of my southern hunters are having a hell of a time finding a place to go and a place to take their young son to get them involved. You've got urban sprawl. There's a thousand different things, and the beauty of land trust is there again. They're taking care of the liability side of things.
Yeah,
you know, and they're land trust is moving south. There's going to be, you know, some people signing up stuff there, but urban sprawl is. I get a lot of quail hunters up here that are switching over to pheasants because there are no quail left.
Mm.
And that's sad.
Oh, big time.
You know,
we're getting quail. Do you have quail here?
I'm getting quail. Yeah. Not enough that I would advertise it.
Yeah, for sure.
But
they're definitely coming back.
Yeah. I get a lot of reports back and
I've heard a lot of quail when deer hunting this past fall.
It's really fun to hear those older Southern guys just, you know, when they come back and tell me about
fired up about a quail,
dude. Yeah, man, they get revved up.
Yeah, yeah.
About need a tranquilizer gun on some of those guys.
Yeah, easy now.
Oh, man.
So I want to ask you a few questions, and I value your time. So thank you for agreeing to do this podcast. But
what is this pay an hour? We never did talk about that.
Yeah, we might have to talk about that later.
Go figure.
So I have a couple questions. What would you give for recommendation for someone that's gonna go hunt? They're literally going to hunt someone else's place, or you know what? What would you give a brand new person that would show up to your door? What are the things that you love it when they do? Give me three things you love it when this is like who they are, and then tell me a few things that are just definite no-nos to make sure.
No-nos, you show Bud Light.
Oh, all right. Okay.
You're going to the next farm over.
They're making a big push to get people to come back on their side, but okay, no Bud Light here.
What's your
preference then? What are you going with?
I'm kind of a Miller Light drinker.
Okay.
Miller
you
Lite,
have Topo Light. Chico. When you offered me a bottle of water, I turned it down, and then I saw you come out with that, and I'm like, wait a minute,
yeah,
go back and
I gotta
you
be honest,
got the good stuff.
These are mixers.
Oh.
And I drink course. Whiskey. I drink whiskey straight, so this is my wife's shit that she's got laying around.
But, well, thank you for
well,
that.
Actually, we do put this in tequila.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yep. I got a buddy down the road that likes these.
Well, that's ranch water.
Yeah, ranch water. Yeah, I was trying to think of it.
Yeah, that's ranch water.
But we don't measure, so it always turns out like shit, and then we just throw it out and go back to whiskey.
Okay.
What do you do? You know?
All right, so don't show up with Bud Light.
Yeah, don't show up Bud Light. I probably wouldn't put on your nicest Biden T-shirt.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, that's I haven't had.
Do you know is there like clear rules? I mean, I asked you when we drove. You kind of took me to the spot, and I said,
first off,
can I drive here?
Oh yeah.
You know, can I drive on the if there's any rain? Would you rather me park on the
road?
I'm
not going to leave anything to the imagination.
Okay.
I'm going to be pretty clear and frank with you. And my wife thinks it's a little intimidating, and I don't mean it to be that way, but I want you to know that, you know, it's kind of serious, you know, because here's a great example. I had a guy text me, he was wanting to bring like a party of 10 and
whoa,
I said, no. And he just couldn't figure out why. Well, I can't keep a party of 10 safe.
Yeah.
You know, I can't spread you guys out enough. You know, they're hunting, you know, some narrow tracks and stuff like that. So there's just some stuff. I'm not going to.
I commend you for that.
I'm not going to waver for money.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. I pretty much at the end just told him, I said, look, if you don't book, someone else is going to. So don't think, you know, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but. This is how it is. If it's not for you, no big deal. We'll still be friends. But I don't really have any hard no's. You know, obviously I want safe, you know, and beer in the afternoon or whatever. You know, I guess just acting a fool, you know, just be respectful, you know, because.
What about one of the ones that I know is just honestly, it gets me too, but I hate to see it at camp, is just dishonesty to the landowner. Like, there's been times where, you know, the landowner is like, hey, did you see anything? And then they say, no, I never saw anything. And then next thing you know, you see like an arrow in their quiver and it's the broadhead's deployed and the, you know.
Yeah, and it's obvious. I know exactly where you're going with this one, and I can answer it very quickly. I've got a policy, and it's on me, because you're not going to answer me. You're going to answer to God when you go to your, you know, go see your maker. But if you can look me in the eye and tell me you felt like the money you spent was not worth it due to not seeing the deer, not seeing the pheasant, not, if you can't see the value in what I provided with you,
yeah,
I will return every cent.
Dang.
If you can look me in the eye and tell me that.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible that someone is going to do that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's on them. And, yeah, and if they suck that bad as a human being, then yeah, I don't even want their money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I really feel like everybody that I have had may be just the opposite. Just,
yeah,
they might tell me that the hunt was awesome when it was just okay. you know what I mean?
That's a good hunter right there. I mean, that's a person that's representing the hunting community well.
And that's all I've had. Now,
what do you like? Well, like, what are the things when guys come in, you're just wanting to, it sounds like you're wanting to do whatever it takes for people anyway, but are there certain things when, you know, when people come up and you're meeting them for the first time that kind of levels them up a little quicker?
I can tell you the hunters that I love. The hunters that I love are the guys that come up in Walmart camo.
You're a grassroots person.
Well, it's because I know
I don't have any Walmart camo.
I see that, Mr. Sitka.
Sorry.
I'll get on that here in a second, all right?
Okay.
But, you know, these guys that come up that their camo doesn't match, they're using an old Mossberg or one of Grandpa's old guns, those are the guys I love, and those are the guys that I work the absolute hardest for, because I know they are on a budget.
Yeah.
They're you know, they'll be in a late model 90s or 2000s Chevrolet, and this, you know, they worked overtime to spend it with me.
Yeah.
And that means a lot, you know. So
that means a lot to me too.
I don't want to disappoint them, and I'm going to go above and beyond to make sure they have the best time of their life. And, you know, typically they're going to be drinking some trashy ass, you know, light beer.
You're going to give them a Miller.
No.
And some Topo Chico.
They can drink whatever they want. But those are the guys that I really, you know, I mean, I've had a bunch of money in my account, and I've been dirt floor poor. So I kind of more resonate with those guys. And, yeah, you know, they typically want to hunt 5 days, but they can't take that much time off work because they got little kids at school and at home. And, those are the guys that I love.
Man, that's awesome.
They're
such
fun.
A cool perspective.
Yeah. No, it's good, but yeah, I really like those blue collar guys that's awesome. That's
the lifeblood of the industry. It is. I mean, 100% is.
They're the ones going to shows. They're the ones subscribing to your channel. You know, and not that the other guys are.
Well, they're the ones going to the Total Archery Challenge and just wanting to take their family out there and not keep score and not, you know,
yeah,
change their integrity for a paycheck. For,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
To get up on the podium. You know, 100%. Like, my time. Honestly, my turkey season being cut short is because those are the types of events that I want to go to,
mm-hmm,
because the people that are there,
yeah,
that is who is there.
And we get them all. I mean, you know, we touched on Sick, and I don't remember how old of a company Sick is, you know, but they make great stuff. It's just, it has nothing to do with Walmart or Sitka. It's just the kind of guys that, you know, gravitate towards that kind of stuff aren't as fun to me. I'm not saying they're bad guys. I'm giving you a hard time because you're wearing Sitka.
Well, just they so might just not want to freeze to death. That's, I mean, honestly, you know, it took me a long time to change the Sitka, but now that I have, I'm pleasantly comfortable.
Since you're so concerned about temperature, maybe you should consider wool.
Well, I do. Sitka makes wool. That's what my underwear are right now.
So we've got, I've got Don Jr., Donald Trump's son's pilot, coming in to do a turkey hunt. So I'll be really interested to see what he shows up in. I'm guessing it'll be Sitka.
It'll be Kuyu.
Or Kuyu. Yeah. I can't even pronounce it. Yeah. That's how broke I am. God bless you. Zoom tight.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for letting me come out, and thank you so much for honestly sitting down and giving me your perspective. It's really cool. It's awesome to see it from that direction, and I'm excited for just to hear of, like, you know, some of these southern guys that are coming up here, guys that, you know, like you said, can't find any place to hunt. You know, they're down there trying to find a place, working their ass off.
Yeah.
And to be able to come up and hunt Iowa, which honestly, I'm from the Mississippi Delta. So I remembered, you know, the monster buck videos in the VHS player down there.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing these Iowa deer, the Midwestern deer just seem like a whole different type of animal.
Well,
so it's cool that
nutrition.
People can, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you look around, you see all the cornfields, and, you know, obviously genetics play a part in that. Mineral programs, whether it's, you know, they're harvesting that mineral out of the earth, or, you know, going to lick tubs for cattle and stuff like that. And we have pockets. We don't have the population here either.
Yeah,
that are continuously shooting everything that is underneath the sun.
Yeah.
Where we don't have the
lower pressure overall.
Lower pressure, and this is mostly private ground in the state of Iowa. So we get to decide for the most part what gets shot, as long as it stays on the property. Where out west, you know, it's kind of a free for all. So it's all that stuff kind of put together to where we can grow some nice deers.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.
In the turkey infested pines, as you referred to it. Yeah. I'm going to get in there and see if a longbeard wants to come taste some stainless steel.
That's right. No lead.
All right. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
You
good
bet.
Meeting
Thanks
you.
For having me.
All right.
Be sure to check out knockonarchery.com for our full line of custom design products, as well as free in-depth education and bow hunting entertainment to help you shoot at your best.